Thanks for joining the Pivot Shift Ahead Mastermind. It is two masterminds in one, where we talk about something that you've asked inside of the Pivot Shift Ahead Facebook group on one side, and then the last half of the call, it's something that's on my mind. I'm very thankful today. We have a wonderful guest host who's going to lead the way, my friend Nakia Dollar from Huntsville, Alabama.
Well, I hope whatever you did this weekend, whether it was showing buyers, sellers, conversations, or maybe time with family, you did what you needed to do to refill your bucket. For the pre-show, I don't know if you all saw the post that James did in the group this week about the pre-show turning into a podcast. So it was kind of exciting. And yet no pressure. I pulled up some conversations in the group and I wanted to mastermind around a post by a pivot favorite, Miss Kim Wallace. She posted, "Hey friends, how are you guys getting your buyer's offers accepted? I've lost my last 5 offer submissions with 2 separate buyers. I've had the conversation with my buyers about submitting the highest and best initially, and I've reached out to the listing agent to get the terms that their seller would most be interested in, and I've had my lender reach out to the listing agent as well. Besides these steps, what are you guys doing? Or am I going about this the wrong way entirely? Lead with listing. I know. Lead with listings and fill the pipeline with more business, so I'm not tied to the outcome. But these buyers are in my pipeline and they're ready to go. So that's going to be our pre-show conversation. How are you helping your buyers get their offers accepted, and when they may be competing? No hands. Really? No hands this Monday? All right. Let's go. Renee, I saw your hand up first.
Oh, thank you so much, Nakia, for the opportunity. So it isn't that I have buyers that are, we're having to write winning offers and stuff now. I'm just remembering back in the, COVID days when interest rates were still really low and, homes were on the market for like 4 minutes before them going under contract. And I do remember some creative things that several agents in my office were doing to stand out in front of sellers and to get their offers, accepted. And one of them actually delivered personal charcuterie boards and a bottle of sparkling cider or wine, to the sellers, so that when they sat down with their offer, they weren't hangry as they were reviewing them. So I thought that was kind of fun. And then another agent would offer to hire a moving truck and a moving team for the sellers, so that it made it easy for them to vacate the property, right? And then of course, they paid to have the house cleaned so that they could move in. So I thought that those were two kind of fun, creative ways that offers were being accepted back in the day.
Sounds good. Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Auntie Donna, what you got for us, my dear?
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for, great to see you here this morning. So, it starts at a couple things. It starts at the consultation table when we're sitting down. I mean, starting from COVID times, and in my market, it still continues. So 5.5 years of living in this strategy, I sit down and I tell them exactly how hard it is to win an offer in these days and times. It hasn't changed in my market. It's the same conversation. I lay it all out. I tell them that, you're going to feel that you're rushed, that you're pushed, that you're making decisions before you're ready, that you're overpaying. You're going to feel all of that because you are. Are you willing to do that? So that's number one. And that's really important. And remembering to tell them that over and over and over again, because that's the tough truth. But the person who just went before me, Renee, you do have to reach out to the other side and find out what is it, here's the language, what is it other than price that will make the seller happy? And then see if you can do that. See if you can do that. And, I don't have 100% control over my buyers. So you didn't hear me say that, but if they happen to send something directly to the seller's mailbox that looks cool, like a love letter, I don't know.
Ricardo, you're up next, my dear.
What's up, Nikia? Thanks for allowing me to share. Hope all is well, and good morning to everybody from Charleston. It's not just about the offer price, it's about the communication. Being able to get in contact with the listing agent, show them that you did the research on the property, you did the comps, you looked at the seller's disclosure agreement and everything. That shows that agent that you are there serious for your client, and you're going to do whatever it takes in order to get both you guys, the buyer and the seller, to the closing table with the win-win mindset. If you don't do that, you don't introduce yourself when you request a showing. You introduce yourself again. If they don't answer before you put in the offer, that agent's going to be like, "I want to work with this person." You have to do the research in regards to who you're working with. See how many listings that they've sold. See what their history is in regards to. Are their listings sitting? Are their listings, how long has their listing been on the market? And be able to see what exactly you can do in order to help that buyer, because you have they have your fiduciary duties, and make sure that you're helping that listing agent and that seller sell that home together. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Awesome, Ricardo. Thank you so much. For the OGs here, and I guess for the, and especially for the newer people, when you think about submitting an offer to a listing agent, there are a couple of things that I have done and that I have coached other agents to do that I wanted to bring up before we go on to the next person. In the files, there is a cover letter for your offer, and a couple of assumptions that will never lead you wrong. One, assume that the person you're dealing with is extremely busy, that they've got so much going on that they don't know north from south, east from west, and that you want to be easy to work with. Your cover letter outlines your communication. It gives everything about your offer in one page. It's a one-page read, a one-pager. You assume everyone that you're working with is extremely busy, and that you want to be easy to work with. It has everything in one page. It details it out, your contact information, your lender's contact information, because sometimes lenders' pre-approval letters may not have their phone number or email address on it. It just gives it information about your client. You put it all in one page and thank them for their communication thus far, whether it's via text message. Never send an offer without having at least a conversation, because listing agents will sometimes share some things over the phone that they'd never put in email, that they'd never put in a text message. And you want to have that little bit of extra information for your client and to help you craft an offer that will work for them. Get as granular as possible. Do they, if your client doesn't have a preference about one thing or another, and you're the seller might, if you can get that information, make it as smooth as possible for them. Thank you for allowing me to share. And it should be in the files. On the pivot group, we'll do something to pop it back up into your realm of awareness. All right, Miss Tasia.
Sure, to see ya.
Tasia, thank you.
So I have a 24. I just got a an offer accepted. There were five offers on the table, so we're still in that market. I have a 24 points that I go through, and we have to do everything to get your offer accepted. So one of them that I do, and that's exactly what I do, everything that you said on that cover email. I do not work with a lender, so the local lender has to be an expert. And I do not work with a lender who is not going to call as soon as we submit an offer. So I text the lender and I said, "Whoa, we just submitted an offer. Do your magic." And they call. The most important, I was coached that the most important person in the transaction is the lender. It's all about the money. And the listing agent wants to know that it's going to close. So that's my share. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Solid points all. Miss Kelly in Tallahassee. She got for
Ring,
us, my dear.
ring, ring, Nikia.
Hello.
Hi, Nikia. This is Kelly Vinson, and I showed Old Forge yesterday, and I'm writing an offer on it. So I wanted to find out what would make your job easy.
A full price offer with little contingencies. How about that?
Okay, so do you feel like 7 days would work?
To close in 7 days?
No, for contingencies.
Sure.
Okay, and what do your people have any type of moving date that would work best for them?
If we could stretch it out to 45 days, that would be super helpful.
Absolutely. And do they need post-occupancy?
Not if we can get the 45 days.
Perfect. Do you have a title company that you like best?
You know what? We have used South Oak and kind of like them, but we're really open to whoever we can fit us in.
Absolutely. Anything else that I can do to make your job easier and your seller's job easier?
Have you educated your client on the inspection process?
We have. I've explained to them that we're not asking for anything unless they can't get insurance.
Okay, so we've done a pre-listing inspection, so anything that showed up there have been addressed. And if you could stipulate that in the contract, that would be super helpful.
I love that. Will you ship that over to me?
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Nikki. I look forward to working with you.
Working with you too. How about that? What would make this easier for you, right? Hey, you know, that was good. I'm so glad this is recorded. All right, Dean Moss, what you got for us, Uncle Dean?
Whoa, Ding. Good morning, everybody, and thank you so much for the opportunity. Good to see you again, Nikki, and look forward to seeing you again soon. Communication is the key. It's been said before. I'll be saying it again and again and again and again and again. So what I always do is use multiple media to contact the listing agent. Nothing irks me more than somebody just sending in a blind contract via email and not telling me I sent you contract. Then 2 days later, when you miss it or it's in spam, they go, "Where the hell's the response on my contract?" I text. I know this happened to others too. I text, I call, I send an email with the full details on, the nature of the offer, who the lender is, things like that, just to make sure that you are presenting an offer and you are showing yourself and your client as more put together than anybody else that's writing an offer. You have to be the most professional out there. I know you agree because you're smelling. Smiling, not smelling, smiling. And it's just present yourself. When you go into a job interview, you don't dress like I do, typically, right? You wear a jacket and a tie if you're a man, or nice outfit if you're a lady. Your best foot has to come forward first. And in case of offers, it's a write-up cover letter and communication, multiple media with the agent. And most of them might get accepted. Knock on wood. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing. You know, the thing about it is we know that our buyers are our client, but the listing agent is our client as well. And recognizing that we have to communicate with them in such a way that works for them. So if you can't get them on the phone, text conversations work as well. Just kind of be mindful of the words you use and any in your syntax, because the listing agent can apply emotion to your text that's not there. So I always use thank you in your responses. I mean, I've done this so well in the past that I've had listing agents apologize to me for not being able to accept our offer because they were looking forward to working with me just in the communication that happened during the offer phase. So keep that in mind. We do what's best for our client to make sure that their offer is fully considered. All right, Michelle, and then
Boucher,
Dan, you'll be next.
that was
Boucher.
close. So thank you. So if you have ever been a listing agent in the position of receiving multiple offers, you know that the agent on the other end is really important, but it doesn't make your buyer's offer accepted. So to answer the question of, I've tried five times and lost five times, there's a few things that in my market I pull out sort of quivers from, that other offers don't typically do. For example, I offer to pay transfer taxes, and I don't know if you all have those in your state, but here in Maryland, it's the equivalent of 1.18% of the price. So that can be a substantial amount of money. And when you do that, the seller nets more money without paying additional commission. So, for example, on a $500,000 house, transfer taxes can be $6,000. So if I pay that $6,000 for the seller, it's sort of writing them a check that has nothing to do with the rest of the deal, and they net that much more money. The other things that I do, we can't do love letters here, they're illegal in Maryland, but explaining in my cover letter the efficacy of or the veracity of my clients' positions, like a lot of people here in the DC area are nervous, right? They're really nervous about whether or not their organization is going to even exist in the next year. So understanding that the seller may be nervous as well. So explaining clearly that these are solid buyers, et cetera. But really doing something extra in the contract that removes
worry, concern, or a roadblock for the seller sometimes clears the pathway because it's not always price. We know that terms are just as important. So yes, you're waiving inspections. Yes, I'm going to get you a home warranty to cover you. Yes, you're going to potentially waive the appraisal. Yes, we're going to put a gap amount in. Yes, you're going to overpay. And all the things you said about the emotional part of it too. But putting that together succinctly in a cover letter so that the agent understands how to present it to the seller, that's the linchpin. You can't rely on them to be you. So
absolutely.
If I want something key presented to the seller, I have to really like bring it down to a third grade level and say, look, our offer is the same price perhaps as another offer, but you're going to net $6,000 more because I'm paying the transfer taxes. So let them know they're not paying any money on those transfers. That's extra money for them. So those kinds of things.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate that. You think about when you're presenting your offer, if you make some, you know, they say what they say about assumptions. And yet, if you make assumptions that the person that you're working with is extremely busy, maybe that this might be the very first time that they're ever presenting an offer, would you craft your offer differently? Would you send information over differently? If you want to make sure that everything that's important to your client is presented to the seller, how would you get that over to them? So thank you so much for sharing. Dan Tamarkin, what you got?
You're doing a great job, Nakia. And Kelly, you did a fantastic job with your role play. What I keep on hearing is this is really a conversation about terms and relationships. And what I found is it's really helpful to have, if you don't have one, a buying power checklist. And if you don't have a buying power checklist, Google it. You'll find a free one online. Well, I know we've also have one in the Pivot Shift community. I'm sure James has a cheat sheet with all the conversations we've had in the past. And the buying power checklist is basically just a list of possible terms you can consider when making an offer. The relationship part, though, is the key part. And we've talked about the importance of building a relationship with the buyers or the listing agent. What I found most challenging, though, and actually a huge opportunity for you, is if the buyers get a chance to build a relationship with the sellers. In some places where you can send a note, do that. And opportunity, I've had people show up at open houses or show up to go visit a property that they're interested in, they bump into the seller. And then the next thing I know, the seller's asking me about that young couple. I really want them to buy the house because I fell in love with them. And that relationship is maybe the most important relationship because once they make an emotional connection to that buyer, they have a vested interest in really wanting to see that buyer move forward with their house. And that just happened to me recently, and it just worked really well. So, you know, those relationships and those terms and that buying power checklist go a long way for you.
Yeah, you know, love letters cut both ways, right? And the offer cover executive summary that I use has a love letter paragraph at the end, but I make sure I'm very intentional about not identifying them as a protected class, not identifying anything that would run afoul of fair housing, because I don't, again, like I said, it cuts both ways. Just like someone could be swayed for someone, they could be swayed against, and we never know what people's leanings are. So we just leave it as fair house compliant as humanly possible. I talk about how they're educated about the process. I talk about maybe a non-personal reason for moving into the area, you know, excited about exploring what North Huntsville has to offer, those types of things. So thank you so much for sharing. Just
one other thing I wanted to add, I forgot, is I also do a video when I submit the offer for the listing agent. And I find that that's an easier way than, and maybe more effective than just writing an email. To just say, hey, here's the summary, the details of our summary, and, you know, present it. And it likes, forget who it was that mentioned it, it to help this listing agent understand how to explain the offer, especially the terms that may stand out that are valuable in a video instead of just putting in an email.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Julie, you're up next in Henderson City, New Jersey.
Thank you. One other thing is check your offers, go through them, make sure they're initialed, make sure all of the everything's filled out correctly. And then when you send it, put it in one PDF so you don't have 95 attachments that you're ultimately making the listing agent's job more difficult. You want them to think, oh my gosh, accepting an offer from this agent has been extremely smooth and easy, because if you're making it difficult for the agent from the start, what is the transaction going to be like, right? So just think, if you had I know we are not seeing 35 offers on properties these days, but if you did, what would the perfect offer look like? And just think ahead and try to make it easy for them.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to get on the Book of Faces. Happy Monday, everybody. Good morning. It's Nakia Dollar, your favorite realtor in the Rocket City, Huntsville, Alabama, guest hosting for James while he's off doing what he's doing, getting ready for Elevate 2026. We're going to be in a book today by Tina Lifford, The Little Book of Big Lies, Your Journey to Inner Fitness. And yes, because, you know, your inner game is probably as important as your external game. But as always, we're going to start our call with something good. Melanie Williams, what's your something good?
My something good, now that I found the mic, is I had the opportunity to have dinner with another Pivot Shift member, Joanne Freeman, who came down to Maryland from New Jersey this weekend. We had an awesome time. She may be on this call, and it was fantastic to get to know her better.
Awesome. Thank you. Lenora Kryla, what's your something good?
I am here. Thank you. So yesterday I auditioned to teach additional classes for the Florida Realtors Association, and it was successful. So I can now teach 4 classes at different associations. The 2 I auditioned for yesterday were short sales and foreclosures, and I'm really excited to bring all that information to all of Florida.
Awesome. Congratulations, and way to go. You know, during our pre-show, we took the time to have a conversation about a post by Kimberly Wallace and her challenges in getting her buyers accepted. We mastermind around some best practices to help our buyers offers stand out and really just way to be easier to work with. And so it kind of reminded me of a conversation I had previously about this market. Now, Gary Keller, and by virtue, James Shaw tells us all the time that the state of the market is irrelevant to the individual agent. And we learn from Auntie Donna that you have to make a decision and decide. So in the Inner Fitness, and in the Little Book of Big Lies by Tina Lifford, she talks about different lies that hold us back. So a big lie is I can't. The truth is I can't is not a choice. It's a fussy avoidance of a deeper truth. The possibility, inviting clarity by acknowledging where you are and your right to consciously choose the direction that is best for you. So try this. Make a pact with yourself to listen to your I can't statements. When you hear them, complete this sentence. If I tell myself the truth, I can't really means, and then fill in the blank. So when you feel like you can't something, there's a deeper meaning there. And more often than not, maybe it's something that you need to learn, a skill you need to acquire, some time management that you need to address. And anything that you want is possible as long as you choose, as Auntie Donna has told us, you make a decision, you decide, and you make it happen. So I'm curious for you, when you think about how you're navigating this market and your I can'ts, how do you turn those I can'ts into I can's? And we love Dean for always being willing to share. What you got for us, Uncle Dean?
Hey, good morning. And thank you so, 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 so very much for the opportunity. Great job today, by the way. Add the words afford not to. Mm. So after you say the word, I can't, add those words all the time, afford not to. I can't afford not to. And it'll put you in that positive state of mind so you could proceed forward and break through whatever limitations you're thinking of at the moment. Thanks, let me share.
And that's our call, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for your time. Mic drop.
Rock.
Tennille Wilson, what do you got for us, my dear?
Good morning, everybody. So I used to teach with a coworker, Mark Kaufman. He said, he would always say, there's can't and there's won't. So it's like, obviously, if you say I can't, you're like giving up and just not even trying. It's really like you don't want to do it. So either you can't, there's can't and there's won't. It's like you're choosing to take the easy way out. So I believe, you know, if you're already taking that mentality, then it's a done deal. But there's effort that goes into everything. We have to put effort into this job of real estate. We can be successful in this market, but we have to put the work into it. So that's what I have to say about
Thank you for this share, Tennille. I got Donna.
Oh, thank you. So
Whoa.
I put it in the chat. So I always ask myself, why can't I? Because we do tell ourselves, I can't often, but you have to also ask yourself, well, why can't I? If there's anybody else on earth doing the thing, why can't I? And figure that out. And on the whole decide thing, I don't, and that is my mantra. You're absolutely right. I don't take that lightly. It is not easy. You have to decide, then you have to stick to it. You might have to decide that very same thing every single day to see if you're truly committed. Thank you, Nakia.
Thank you, Donna. I really appreciate that you mentioned the fact that deciding is a repeat activity, right? There's something that you make a decision and it happens like no matter what. And yet most things you make a decision and you have to redecide over and over and over again. Brevon in Charlotte, North Carolina, what you got for us?
Hey girl, hey. I'm right there with Tennille. It's not an issue of you can't, it's you won't. Because if you have clarity around why you're doing this or why this action, this next action is in alignment with your goal, then there is no can't. There is just I will. And anytime that you feel like you cannot do something, as you said in the book, there's a clarity disconnect, or there's something that is not allowing you to connect that action to that end result. So if you get clarity around, I think it's the one thing that says a goal is a success is being appropriate in the moment, and that's in the moment, that's in the second, that's in the minute. That is having awareness around what you're doing. And if you feel like you can't do something, what will you do? Like if you feel like I can't talk to 20 people today, okay, well, can you talk to 10? Can you talk to two? Can you talk to one? So I think it's just a it's a domino, versus it, denying you access to what you absolutely have the ability to do.
Awesome. Thank you, Bree. That was amazing. Decision is staying in alignment with a goal is being appropriate in a moment. That's the purpose of a goal. That's what it says in the one thing. The purpose of a goal is not necessarily to achieve a result, it's to be appropriate in the moment. And when you have clarity on what it is you want to accomplish, you know whether or not you need to turn right or left. And sometimes our challenge is that there are so many amazing things that we could be doing, and maybe that we even enjoy doing, and yet which one is going to take us closer to our desired outcome? Miss Julie Hess, what you got for us?
Good morning. Good morning. Well, so we talk to our we talk when we were talking to our clients, we always go three deep. So we need to go three deep on ourselves. Everything that we do, why aren't we asking? And Donna started it. I wrote three things down. Why can't I? And think about that for a while. And then what would happen if I did? And then what would happen if I didn't? What would change? So I think when it comes to, yourselves, we need to treat ourselves just as well as we treat our clients, and we need to go three deep with ourselves. And the other thing too is I think you need to define what it is that you do want to do. Like, I don't want to jump out of an airplane. It takes me everything just to get on the darn plane. And my niece wants me to go skydiving. Like, no. And oh, you got to come out of your comfort zone. There's nothing comfortable about, most of you that know me know that I got to drink a little bit before I get on the plane. So why would I want to jump out? So if there's something that that's just not in your heart, then don't do it. But if there's something that you really desire to do, ask yourself, why can't I? And figure out how you can. What would happen if I did? Oh my goodness, it would open up the doors. And what would happen if I didn't? I'd probably be in the same spot that I am right now, and then my life's not moving forward.
Amen. Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Kim LaPlante over in the Atlanta area. What you got, my dear?
Hey, good morning, Nakia. What I think about with this is, our limiting beliefs. So, quick scenario: I was in the gym today and working the arm press, which is shoulder press, whatever, which is my nemesis. And I realized, and I'm will kind of do like 35, 40 pounds now, but I felt weak today, so I put it on 25. And when I did, I was like, this is so easy. But when I started, I could only do 10. So for us to think about in life and our business, what have we already overcome? And once we overcame it and we got on the other side, we were stronger. So now if we go back to that situation, you know, to realize, hey, I overcame this before, I'm going to overcome it again, and I'm stronger this time, so it's even going to be better than before.
When you flex those muscles, it doesn't get easier, you get stronger. And when you take the time to reflect on how far you've come, you can appreciate the journey and the progress. Thank you, Kim. I appreciate you sharing. Erica You're welcome. Rose, what you got?
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity. So actually, to piggyback off what Kim just said, Tony Robbins has a mantra that success leaves clues. So if you're looking for where have you won in the past, where have you succeeded in the past, what you look for, you find. And for me, with that phrase of...
If I tell myself the truth is, I can't really means...
I can't really means, if I tell myself the truth, I can't really means, I can't afford... cannot afford not to. And I think of a mantra that I've told myself many of times, I can, I will, I must, it's done. And so anytime that shows up, if you keep playing that in your mind, then it can and will shift your mindset. And what you think about all day long is, you are what you think about all day long. And that's what Ralph Waldo Emerson said. So if you're constantly walking around with I can't, you're going to show up with a lot of I can'ts versus I can, I will, I must, it's done. And then ask yourself the one thing question. What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else is easier and unnecessary?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Erica. I really appreciate you sharing. Maria Sims, you're up next. And then Telly, you're after her.
Good morning, Nakia. So what I have found it for myself is that I can't really slips out and creeps up on you when I'm feeling overwhelmed or I'm afraid of failing or when I'm tired. But, you know, the truth of it is that it's usually just a fear dressed up as a fact, right? So if you think about it in this business, you know, we know Anna Kruger said we got to talk to 150 people to likely set an appointment nowadays. So, you know, that I can't comes in because that big number and that fear. So if you take it, what I found for myself is if I can come in and I can change my framework in my mind of I can try and I can learn to do better scripts and I can grow through this problem and I can keep going even when it's hard, right? Because the first thing we want to do is run and quit or say we can't. And, you know, that's just not what we should do. A lot of times it's just taking that first little step to learn the first new thing or change that first little thought. And what I have found personally is that those little I can stack up really quicker and make something great and bigger. So I would just say, keep going and, you know, quit saying you can't because it's that you're unwilling, like Aunt Donna said.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing, Maria. Telly, you're next, and then Miranda after him.
Good morning, Nakia. Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone had an amazing weekend. So I can't is basically saying I'm not going to is basically I can't. I'm not going to do it. One of my favorite bold laws is there is no try, because you either are knocking on the door or you're not. You're either making the phone call or you're not. But the thing is that with each one and each time, you know, that's why we jump on these calls, is because we learn and understand and get to know so many other people and make those connections so that those I can'ts turn into I will. It doesn't turn into, oh, I might. No, it's not if, it's when. We stand up, we get the growth, we get the opportunities, we're grateful for the chances, and we're able to make the things happen so we can be, do, and have, and live the lives that we have. And we can look back and know, you know, who we're doing this for. You know, I went and I talked with a friend of mine yesterday, my coach, and I literally sent her an email and said, I defined myself. I told her exactly who I am, and I knew what my big why was. And if it's not big enough to put a tear in your eye, if you are not to succeed and you're to look back and say, this is the things I can't do, this is the reason I can't stand up and make a difference and really change the lives of so many people and live the life that
I deserve, the life that I want, not just for who's important to me, but also for myself. We only have one life for all we know. We have to do the things so that we can have what we truly desire and want. And I can't is too strong, is not strong enough to stop you when you really have that goal and desire. Thank you. Hope everyone has an amazing day.
Thank you, Telly. We really appreciate that share. Miranda, you're up next, my dear.
Good morning from the north suburbs of Chicago, where we're actually starting to get a little chilly. I'm not liking it. When you first brought this topic up, I was like, you know, I really don't ever say I can't. My biggest problem actually is that I'm like, oh no, we can totally do that. We can totally do any. And I tend to overestimate what we're capable of, which is fine. I'd rather, you know, shoot for the moon and land among the stars. But what it made me think of is when I was a kid, I was at this camp called Loras Law Sports Camp. And I got, at the end of the week, everybody gets this emblem of the sport that they were really good at. And you had to pick three sports that you learned for the week. And at the end of the week, everybody got like tennis, swimming, basketball. I got a tree. I got a tree. I didn't get a sport. I got a tree because the tree stood for perseverance. And when I was a kid, I thought that was such a cop-out. Like, oh man, that's just a nice way of saying that I suck at everything. I'm terrible at sports. But the thing is I always was willing to try. I was always willing to keep going and be willing to suck. That's the thing that I think you have to be if you're, you know, if you say I can't, well, it's because you're not willing to suck at it. My husband has given up on golf. My husband, does not want to do golf. And I'm like, why? And he says, because I just can't handle being terrible at something. And I'm like, well, that's lame. You have to be willing to suck at something. I suck at a lot of things. When I go out door knocking, I guarantee the first two doors I knock on, I'm going to sound like a moron. And that's okay. That's okay. The first two calls that I make, when I make my calls, yeah, I usually sound like an idiot. It's okay. Be okay with sucking for a little bit. And persevering until you're good at it.
Absolutely. Everybody's bad when they first get started.
Everyone sucks. Everybody sucks when they start something. And then the more you do it, the better you get.
But awesome. Thanks, Miranda. Celestine, we're going to move on. We got two more minutes. We have about six more hands up, and I'd like to give other people the opportunity to share. Thank you so much, Celestine.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. Quickly, I was raised by my mom after my dad passed away. He did 30 years in the military, but she raised us with those words daily. His favorite saying was, can't is not a word in our vocabulary. And as an athlete, as a young athlete, and still as a 64-year-old athlete, I was trained with, you can't quit. You know, I cannot afford to quit. I can't quit before I cross the finish line. And, you know, I can't speak negatively because it will manifest and become my truth. So I can do all things by Christ who strengthens me. And I'm just everything. I'm everybody. And I can do it. And I just do it. And one of my favorite sayings is just do it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Your words matter. Your words absolutely matter. Got time for two more. If you make it quick, Emanuela and Brittany.
Nakia, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Listen, it's always great to see y'all. Listen, when I hear you can't, I realize I need clarity about what to do and the tools to do it. So once I figure out, okay, what should I be doing right now? And what is it that I need to fulfill this particular task? Then I can move and approach it. So when I hear can't, that means I need clarity around what to do and the skills to achieve it.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Brittany, be safe out there.
Well, real quick, the only thing I was going to say is I used to take this cycling class and the cycle instructor used to say, talk to yourself, don't listen to yourself. And so like your mind will talk you out of anything. You have to talk yourself into it and not out of it. And so just talk yourself into it. And a lot of times like our limiting beliefs did show up like just in this instance, like we've had seeds of limiting beliefs. And so we're just feeding them. And it's like, whatever you feed will grow. So starve the doubt and like feed the be the yes, be the possibility of your, you can. And my mindset is like, the only thing separating me between MREA is time. Like, I just got to keep doing the work. So feed the yes, and whatever you feed, you know what I mean, will grow. So feed the thing that you want to grow and talk yourself into it and out of it.
Awesome. What a great way to close out the call. And she reminded me of something that John Acuff says, that you are the most convincing person that you will ever meet. You have and will talk yourself into and out of everything. So you've got your inspiration. Now it's time to go put in the perspiration. Have an amazing day, and we will see you next time. Take care.
Thank you, Nakia, so much for hosting today. I appreciate it. Hey, if you enjoyed what we talked about on this call, you're invited to hang out in the community. You can join the Pivot Shift Ahead Facebook group. It's super simple. Go to Facebook, search Pivot Shift Ahead, and you'll find us. Next, if you want to get connected to what we do, go to jamesdshaw.com, and it has a link to how to join the Mastermind Call live on Zoom, along with information on everything we do, including our membership community, the Inspire Collective. We'll see you next time. You got your inspiration. Go put in the perspiration.